Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly movie podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined by Ann Thompson, our editor at large. And Ann, wow, we made it through the Oscars. This is our first and only post-Oscars discussion of 2021, hopefully. We'll see how the next few weeks go, but we did get to the other. The thing about the craziness of this year is that there were a lot of great movies to talk about, but it did sometimes feel like it was never going to end.
And we were just flogging a dead horse, you know. I mean, you know, one thing we should talk about is that the one place that seemed interested in the Oscars was IndieWire. Our readers were eating up all of our stories, everything we were doing. I mean, what is our job? Our job is actually to reach our readers. And if that's in that regard, you know, I think we did okay. I commend and admire and respect our whole team.
I mean, it shouldn't come as a surprise that people who are serious about movies cared about an award season that had filmmakers like Chloe Zhao and Thomas Vinterberg and David Fincher in the conversation and giving us reasons to talk about their filmmaking style and sensibilities and how it related to the wider culture. I mean, Oscars as a portal to these bigger ideas about art and society are what keep this job interesting. It's not the statues alone.
It's about, I couldn't agree more. And it's about talking. What the Oscars give us is besides a rooting interest, but it gives us an opportunity to talk to some of these very gifted people. And I really enjoy that. And it never gets old for me.
Even if you can't party
down
with them.
No, I miss that. I even got invited to one last night that I just couldn't go to, something very small, but I couldn't, it just took me a while to sort of parse and sort through everything that happened last night. Because honestly, Eric, I was watching the Oscars all day long. It started at 10 a.m. There was all this red carpet stuff. There was a pre-show that a lot of people didn't even know about. There were five songs on the pre-show in full that a lot of people didn't know about that
which were, I think, was a mistake,
sacrificed from the Oscars themselves.
We missed that.
And I actually enjoyed that part of it more in some ways than the Oscars themselves.
Well, so let's get into it because there's so much to dig through. And I think first and foremost, we should look at the Oscars themselves and whether or not it meshed with the kind of vague expectations we had with Soderbergh sort of teasing a Oscar ceremony as a movie, a celebration of story, all this kind of stuff. Certainly when we got this cinematic aspect ratio and a long shot of
the
Regina
tracking
King.
Shot with Regina King into
like
Union Station was great.
That
was fun.
Cool.
It was a great concept.
Deliver off of that in the sense that I was thinking, are we going to get some sort of actual narrative arc? And that's where it really came up short, is that at the end of the day, you did feel that tension between someone trying to innovate. And at the end of the day, this was just an Oscar show in a pandemic year and very difficult to make that.
But he kind of cut off his own legs. And I am giving Soderbergh responsibility, even though the director was Glenn Weiss and Stacey Scherer was very much involved in the parts of the show that worked, which were the exterior courtyards and the pre-show and the after show. And Glenn Collins was very much involved with the pre-show and the musical performances. He was a Grammy producer. So Soderbergh, in the interviews that we did, you know, the press conferences we covered, he was totally responsible for the big show. And it was his concept that it be the movie. And the movie didn't work. It was a lot of talking. There weren't any clips. he took away the pizzazz, the scale, and maybe he had to because it was the pandemic and this was what he was forced to, you know, make a silk purse out of a sow's ear if he could, and maybe he couldn't. But I think that he didn't necessarily, our critic, Ben Travers, I was harsh on the show. I give the producers a lot more slack than he does. But he's right about one thing. They failed to remember that this was a TV show.
Yeah, you felt that tension between trying to do something kind of bold and cinematic and then at the same time realizing you do need to move it along in a way that is engaging and also recognizing this is live TV with uncontrollable variables in the audience and you just cannot build something around that. I mean, the lack of clips for the first half of the show was very strange because it led to these sort of Jeopardy-like moments where they would sort of tell you the backstory of everyone, which, look, we've heard that for months and months.
I know, tell me about it. Yeah, the sushi company in Vermont.
That was great. I mean, good for Darius Martyr to have that out there. I'm sure he's ready to move on from that backstory. But yeah, I mean, I see the ingenuity on some, or the impulse to innovate, but it's almost like it's from somebody who's watched too many Oscar shows and not realizing that other people actually want to watch the Oscars. And so
I was surprised at how much and then the shuffling of the order, which was a huge decision.
We got to talk about that because we had to run a show. So we kind of knew it was coming, but it was a dramatic choice. I mean, I was thinking about how in New York Film Critics Circle, we decided always to vote on Best Picture first, because when you know Best Picture, then it informs choices in other categories.
And everybody knew Nomadland was going to win. Right? That was not a surprise. So they took the two high stakes acting categories and put them at the end because they thought that they would be dramatic. And they put, what I don't understand is why do you take one category, even if you just go with that concept, which I disagree with, it should end on Best Picture. But so, and then Chloe Zhao should have been, you know, having her moment, but and Frances McDormand, you know, but the point was they had two actresses in the room and they put that before Best Actor, where they had two actors with the possibility of not being there, with the certainty of not being there, because Anthony Hopkins, his reps begged the Academy to give him a Zoom call so that he, if he won, he could accept, because he didn't want to schlep to London or Dublin or Ireland or wherever they were offering him a hub. And it was at 83 years old, well within his rights. So why do you take a chance that it's not Bozeman? Why do you take that chance?
And if it was Bozeman, then obviously you don't have that actor, but you have your emotional ending. And that's the other part of this gamble that's worth looking at. Obviously, there was a lot of outrage and puzzlement over that snub and the way that things ended. But the reality is, it's not like that just came out of left field. Okay, when we spoke last week,
it was a toss-up. Right. Yes,
that really could have happened because of BAFTA, because of the support that movie had.
The momentum was with Hopkins. There's no question about it.
Right. So this is a classic example of how a certain kind of Oscar season narrative, which, let's be honest, on our own kind of prognostication, we thought it was going Chadwick's way. But when that narrative solidifies so early on, it can be very difficult to actually see specifically what's happening. And it's just sort of shocking that even the producers themselves might have fallen prey to that kind of process, where the prognostication starts to determine the way that the Oscars plan the show is just so
there's
strange.
You know, it just reminds me. I mean, I welcomed and I was excited about the show. I was hoping that they could reinvent it in a good way. But what it kind of reminds you, people are complaining today that the In Memoriam section was rushed. People are complaining today that they put the one comedy bit in the whole show right at the moment of most tension about all the big categories coming up. And everybody's raring to go. The people in the room, you could see them sort of cringing that they had to be like, Aaron Sorkin wants to watch Glenn Close dancing to Da Butt, you know, in the middle of a show when his own movie is about to be revealed as a loser. You know, he does. The Trial of the Chicago 7 won nothing, but he was hoping it was going to win Best Picture. And it was the wrong thing to do at the wrong time.
Someone was interviewing me earlier today about the show and was asking about the whole hostless Oscars thing. And what was fascinating in that moment is you saw, okay, so Lil Rel Howery pops in and he's sort of like a mini host. It's like
he did very well, actually.
Had a host, if he had been there the whole time,
he would have been great. Like
Questlove have more of a role or somebody
who was
on camera to be to sort
Regina
of guide
could have
along.
Done it. Yeah, Regina was the best one there.
You could have.
What
had
she had to do
like
in that,
that
first shot was very tricky. She had to do that live.
Yeah, and it's great for her brand. You know, she pops up in a commercial later on. It like just makes her super ubiquitous. So that is something that we see as still an open question, is maybe whatever this show continues to be does actually benefit in some ways from having a singular persona guided along, as opposed to a camera and a lot of trickery involving angles and rooms and so forth. So interesting challenge there.
I welcomed the return of the red carpet and the fashion and the party vibe at the exterior courtyard. And I wanted to be there so badly. I did.
That was nice too. There was a nice montage at the beginning about,
but a lot of people didn't see that. A lot of people didn't. So it ended up being Frances McDormand who had to do the job of exhorting people to go back to theaters.
Leave it to Frances. If it's not inclusion writers, it's some other cause that the industry needs her to bring.
Or she's howling at the moon in honor of a lost comrade.
Too. And you know, it was a nice sort of moment, all things considered. I mean, I will say, in spite of all of this stuff, I did enjoy a lot of stuff that happened over the course of this show. And so,
Kaluuya with his mom in London was very sweet.
It was a really powerful speech and funny. And then you have Vinterberg obviously telling
very
the same
sad.
Powerful story he's told, but in a way that I think really just worked. I mean, he got the beats of that down. He got all the thank yous out of the way and then circled back. They didn't play people off. So for better or for worse,
I approved of that too. I'm glad that they had the speeches. I thought that was a smart move on Soderbergh's part.
Very interesting to see an Oscar.
The music was off. As much as I love Questlove, there were a lot of moments where I felt like the music was a little strange.
You know, he DJs like 5 times a night. That was just another gig for that guy. So let's talk about another interesting category, though, that was perhaps not as shocking a snub in terms of overall reaction, but certainly if you were trying to guess the Oscars, a lot of people got this one wrong, and that's cinematography.
Me too. I got it wrong.
Not Go to Nomadland, and Netflix did pretty well in those crafts.
Seven awards altogether, 2 for Ma Rainey, which we expected, and 2 for the big leader, Mank. So they got cinematography and
not
production
shut out
design.
Like Irishman last year, as mm-hmm. we had thought maybe was possible. Do you think that's because people, if you have an exquisite black and white movie, it's just automatically, because it's so memorable as that, ahead of the pack? Because there is something
it
to
worked
be
for
though.
Cuaron
and the artist.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, there's something there that I think is worth internalizing.
And it was the ASC winner that won. So in that case, the Guild did call it. But I think what the thinking was, and if you want to look at it, and in other words, McDormand had enough support to win Best Actress. In order for Nomadland to be the strong contender that it was for director and best picture, it needed to win at least one more. So we all thought it was cinematography, and it wasn't. It was McDormand.
But when exactly, because when cinematography happened, a lot of us, and I know you and I and others were sort of getting nervous about it.
Yeah.
Because then you get to editing, and we already knew that probably wasn't going to Nomadland.
No.
So if it went to trial, then we might be on track for that trial upset that some people had been guessing.
Which it didn't.
It
so at that point, we kind of knew that trial wasn't going to win Best Picture, because it's very rare. It happens that we were doing the math on how many movies have won Best Picture with only one other Oscar. They do exist, but it's rare.
Yeah.
You need support.
So McDormand was the powerful major category that told us what was happening there, although it did tell us what was happening there after Best Picture was announced.
Tell me about it. Tell me about it. It was just wrong.
But the thing about that was, this was the category everybody had a different opinion about. This was the one where no matter what happened, a lot of people were going to be wrong. Some people, I said Carey Mulligan, you said Viola Davis. Neither of us were right there. A few people did call it for Frances McDormand, but it was it was fascinating to think about.
Partly because of her BAFTA win. But remember, I mean, my argument was that she won. We should have been paying more attention to BAFTA. It turns out that this international vote that I've been talking about all this time, this 22% of the Academy, this, you know, the membership drives that have increased all kinds of categories over the past 5 years, the European / international vote was very key to Nomadland, The Father, which won two. It also won adapted screenplay, and over Nomadland, and Anthony Hopkins and Minari. There were a lot of Sundance movies that did well. These were all Sundance movies. Plus, Sound of Metal, Promising Young Woman got in there from Sundance with one, the Emerald Fennell win.
Yeah, that was nice and early.
It's a thing. It's a thing we have to keep in mind. Even my octopus teacher was a big win from South Africa.
It's a very international body and a lot of British members.
Yep, 700 or so. That's a big number.
Pretty significant. So this happened. I mean, with McDormand winning three Oscars, she is in rarefied company and doesn't even seem to try that hard to make it happen. So it is quite extraordinary that and especially this year in that category.
Part of the narrative there was that she found the book. She found Chloe Zhao. She developed the script with her.
She won two Oscars.
And that's part of the story, that she had the sense. And backstage in the digital media room, the virtual media room, which we've become all too familiar with, and I hate them. Everybody's, you know, mute isn't working. You know what I mean? But anyway, she actually made a point, Zhao, of commending McDormand and saying that people didn't realize how hard this really was for her and how vulnerable and exposed and sensitive and sort of naked she had to be. And, I mean, to fool everyone into thinking that she was one of them.
Yeah. And that's a story, obviously, that we've heard many times over, but the kind of commitment that it entails, I mean, it is sort of like the Daniel Day-Lewis thing, right? It's we've heard people say that method acting is this very, like, male macho thing, but clearly McDormand is sort of the kind of the example of someone who, you know, a woman who has managed to basically become the role that she plays in a completely immersive way that just is so remarkable to look at. I mean,
hard to imagine other people. You could imagine Daniel Day-Lewis doing what she did, actually. I mean, right.
Maybe he's got to come out of retirement.
But it's hard to imagine very many people putting that level of commitment into it. And integrity really is the word.
Now, we should touch on another issue that's come up here, which is you had two older white actors win the leading acting categories. So where does this leave us in terms of the Academy pushing back 5 years plus on from Oscars So White against this narrative that it only rewards white people and it shunts the people of color and it's supporting?
I'm not going to go there. They had the highest number of people of color ever, 9 out of all the acting categories. There was a chance that if Bozeman and Davis had won, that they would have all 4 for the first time, people of color winning the acting categories. They ended up with 2. And I think that Hopkins and McDormand won fair and square and deserved to win. I have no issues with that. I think Bozeman peaked early. If the Academy hadn't been 2 months late, Bozeman would have won, and Davis probably. So she won SAG. So it was very close. It was close.
I think what you're hitting on is an important point to remind people too, which is that it's an honor to get nominated. Getting nominated means that you have some support from the Academy.
Absolutely.
First place. And it can go so many different kinds of ways. It's not an excuse necessarily. I mean, it would be nice to see all those categories just completely exclusively people of color. And hopefully the industry is heading in that direction. But bottom line is it was going to be one person, and that nobody can fully control the way that these things play out. It's a very amorphous process. So maybe unfortunate on a cultural level, but it's ultimately, I don't think you can't pin it down to a single.
No, variable. But I mean, you had so many different records being broken. I mean, Zhao was the second woman to win Best Director, which is a sad statistic. She was the first woman of color to win that award. The first Chinese woman to win that award. And Yeo Jung-yoon was the first Korean woman to win her category and the second Asian woman to win that category since Sayonara in 1958. So it's you know, there's progress being made here.
All right. So speaking of progress and where we need to have further discussions of it happening, let's turn to the octopus in the room, because whoever the hell sent me that octopus emoji the day that this movie was nominated did it again last night, twice. So somebody was having a good time. And clearly this was a real surprise arc of sorts that was expected to happen in the days and weeks leading up to the show, but certainly not
early
six
on.
Or 7 months ago.
You and I talked about it. I remember looking it up on Metacritic and realizing with some surprise that there were like three reviews on there. Yeah, and I talked to Netflix about it. They didn't put it in their slate of documentaries. They were rooting for Crip Camp and for the Kristen Johnson, Dick Johnson is Dead. They definitely were hoping to deliver for the Obamas, right?
Yeah, it's a higher ground project.
Exactly. So Crip Camp. So that was a whole. I mean, and I predicted Crip Camp right out of Sundance. It won the IDA. It would have been the Oscar winner if it weren't for My Octopus Teacher. It was the pandemic. And it was a movie that just hit people right between the ribs. They just couldn't love it enough. It made them just go loose and goose over this movie.
But you know, somebody described it to me the other day as an Apple screensaver, which I think kind of nails it for me. It's just, I felt like there was no there in this movie, especially in a category that was populated with so much more depth.
The other four movies are better than My Octopus Teacher as movies in terms of what you and I look at, your critic, what we look at in terms of quality and integrity and all of that. What I do recognize is that the people who made the movie knew they had something, and they worked and worked and worked and brought in lots of other people who could help them, including Netflix, to shape this narrative. Yes, it was a bunch of footage from the bottom of the ocean of this guy, you know, making out with an octopus, but they shaped it into a movie that worked with the public. And you have to give them credit for making a movie that worked emotionally for people.
I'm not in the business of going after people for whatever it is they do necessarily. It wasn't like they did something immoral, but I do think from a cultural standpoint, it's one of the more frustrating moments for nonfiction film in this country in recent memory, that you would have such a striking range of cinema on display, some of the best movies of last year, period, from Time to Collective to The Moyage, and even Crip Camp was a real crowd pleaser, and that somehow something got in there that just screwed up that balance. And it's just, I think there's something that the documentary branch is probably going to be talking about with its members about how that happened. And it's not as,
Eric, you know, it's not a
like
mystery.
It's not a category mystery how that happened. But it's a,
they liked it better. That's how it happened.
I know why it happened, but what I'm saying is
it's not like they can fix it. They can't fix it. Eric, if that were to happen again, it would happen again.
It could happen again, because now it's really just a question of what's going to pop up randomly in some streamer's library that has that same sort of impact. It does feel like it could be a paradigm shift in terms of the kinds of movies that can float up to the Oscar conversation.
This is interesting, Eric, because this is the definition of a sleeper. This is the definition of a movie that got where it got without the help of the critics, without the help of film festivals, without even the help of its own distributor. Yeah. It happened all by itself because people loved it so much. Why does that bother you?
Why doesn't that happen to other kinds of movies?
Your movies, the movies that were by my measure, way better than my octopus teacher, which is too manipulative, too anthropomorphizing. You know what I'm saying? It casts all sorts of emotions and motivations onto this sea creature that probably didn't exist.
It's the shape of water as a two-hander, apparently.
It's really, really effective, and it cannot be denied. But is it a great documentary? No.
Okay, so now we don't have to talk about it again unless they create a franchise or something. So
this was a rarity. I mean, it's never going to happen again.
So.
And it was partly the pandemic as well. Because remember, most of the time we're all being told how much we're ruining the planet, how we're responsible in our daily lives for cruelly destroying animal life and ruining everything as we know it. I mean, we're on the verge of destruction. And here's this movie that's about a man falling in love with an alien sea creature in a pure, very emotional way. And if he can reach, you know, like the guy said at the Oscars, one of the co-directors, you know, if a man can create a relationship like that with an octopus, what else can we do? That's not a terrible message.
I don't know. There's a lot of ways you can read into that one, and we would have to devote a whole other podcast to pulling it apart. So that happened.
It was probably written by someone in the PR department at Netflix.
It's
honestly
good to have Netflix in your
Chris
corner.
Tabley. I think it was you.
give whoever credit you want to. In any case, the rating sucked. It was the lowest in recent memory. We got
9.8 million.
58% drop from previous year,
which isn't in line with the other shows, but just for context, 2014, 43.7 million, and it's been going down steadily in very small increments, so that last year it was 23.6. And each year that there's a big blockbuster in the mix, it sometimes pops back up. But in this case, no blockbusters in sight. And it went from 23.6 off a cliff to 9.8.
I mean, we all knew that we were heading in this direction anecdotally. I mean, I'd certainly
sure.
had conversations with people who said, wait, I thought the Oscars already happened, or aren't they next weekend, or what movies are nominated and all that kind of stuff. So I think we're all just kind of eager at this point to get this behind us. You know, the show didn't necessarily do what we wanted to do. Some of the awards worked out great. I'm certainly happy about Nomadland and the way that movie ended up being celebrated in that fashion. I am eager to move into a slightly less restrictive reality that seems like it could be right around the corner. You and I are already planning to go to Cannes, fingers crossed. It seems like we're on that trajectory. So that's promising. It looks like maybe Americans can go into France starting in May, vaccinated Americans. And we're hearing rumblings of a lineup coming together. So soon we'll have.
I'm hearing it's not necessarily secure, though.
It's a real open question, isn't it?
No, I'm hearing there's people who are in and out in terms of participating.
Yeah, and we want to go and we want to see festivals in general kind of return to being these culturally influential aspects of what we do. But it's a real open question of exactly how they're going to pull it off. What's interesting is that we're just getting a lot of news that sounds different from the kind of news we had before. And with Cannes gearing up to go into July, that means we have a very busy festival corridor starting in the summer with Tribeca.
No, I think we're going to start
New York and so forth. So
we're going to see more pictures. I'm excited. I got invited to a screening of In the Heights. I can't wait to see it. Yeah.
There's real movies around the corner, but first you're going to take a break. No movies, nothing work related. Don't think about the awards. Don't even think about what might be awards potential. And we'll see how that goes. But
now look, I have to do Emmys next. You don't have to do that.
Yeah, no, I'll be watching and paying attention to certain things. I've seen a few things I'm eager to throw my voice into the conversation about. But sure, I mean, look, it's always going to be a process for us to figure out when award season ebbs and flows, but this was certainly a unique ride, and I enjoyed being on it with you, Anne. So I hope you get a chance to rest up, because we got work to do after all this stuff.
Absolutely. See you later, Eric.
Enjoy.